Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
It was great.
Out of the way, Zala, you dumbass.
What's the deal with Dama? I think he's kind of hilarious.
Who keeps making that sound?
I think we should form a Dama fan club.
What?
Yeah, like Dama can really go out in style.
And infamy.
I just wanted to see what its insides looked like.
Jeff's a little off, you know?
Why are you doing this?
It interests me.
We need to talk.
You need to get out of your shell.
Jeff.
Enough.
Are you sexually active?
Sort of. Do you want to go to the prom? You want to seem normal, right? You seem healthy to me. What about what's on a patient's mind?
Are you okay?
Why don't you just leave him alone? He's not a sideshow attraction.
I'm just like anybody else.
Welcome to Horror versus Reality. I'm Anastasia. Miss Anna, if you're nasty, that's not the first time I've made that Janet Jackson joke, nor will it be the last. Morgan is back with us. Hey, Mo.
Hey, it's me, Mo. Morgan. Not hey. Nasty Morgan.
We missed you, Mo.
Yeah, I liked that little switch up you did. I enjoyed it.
Thanks. In some ways, Dahmer has something in common with Lola. Do you know what that is?
No. They both think so.
They both tried to lobotomize people so that those people would never leave them.
Oh yeah, that part. I was thinking about Baby Dahmer.
No, Baby Dahmer doesn't have a lot in common with Lola. His family is not perfect, but it's normal compared to Lola's home life.
Yeah.
Like, super normal.
Yeah.
Anyways, today's episode, since I haven't said it yet, but I'm sure you did read what the title was, is My Friend Dahmer from 2017 versus Dahmer's Early Years. This is part one of our two-part Dahmer series, because May is Dahmer month.
Yes. His birthday is the day before mine.
I thought you said it was the 21st.
Oh, is his the 21st? Mine's the 23rd.
Yeah, I think it's 2 days before yours.
Oh, might be. Had my facts wrong.
Because remember, we're going to record on his birthday.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, it is the May 21st.
Yeah. It's not really in honor of him. It's honestly coincidental, but we're rolling with it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely doesn't honor Dahmer.
Yeah.
I think it's funny because I think this is the second one that we've done on like someone's birthday. That was just sheer coincidence.
I don't know if it was a birthday, but it was maybe the day they died or something. We definitely did something like this. You're right.
Yeah.
I don't remember who it was, though. You know, when you record a lot of these, sometimes stuff just kind of runs together. You don't remember what all you've said.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, it's fine. All right, so I'm going to give you guys a rundown of this movie and then tell you some fun behind-the-scenes facts, as always. Or at least the better half of this podcast's journey so far. All right, so, as I said, it's a 2017 film. It was directed by Mark Myers. The screenplay was by Mark Myers, and that's based on the graphic novel of the same title of the film, My Friend Dahmer, by Dirk Backdurf. So I've actually read this graphic novel.
Oh, that's awesome. I was wanting to get a copy before we recorded, but I did not.
Yeah, I don't own a copy of it. I should, but I don't. But I rented it from the library during that one summer when I didn't have internet or cable. yeah, so I rented that from the library, and I read it, I want to say, the summer of 2015. And it's really well done. It, much like the film, it does humanize Dahmer because he wasn't a monster yet, you know?
He was just
a troubled kid who only becomes more troubled as time goes on. But he hadn't murdered anyone yet, so, you know. Which, the star of this movie who plays Dahmer, Ross Lynch, that's what he actually said himself. You know, it was much easier to play him and find real human emotion in him because this is him pre-killing 17 guys.
Yeah, he was just killing dogs and animals.
Well, yeah, that does start to happen.
Yeah.
So it stars Ross Lynch as Dahmer, Anne Heche as his mom, Alex Wolff as one of his newfound friends at high school, Dallas Roberts as his father, and Vincent Kartheiser as the jogger / doctor. So you might recognize Vincent Kartheiser because he played Angel's son on the WB show Angel. which is, you know, like a Buffy spinoff. Yeah. He also was on Mad Men, if you watched that. I don't know what his character is because I've never really watched that show much.
Yeah, I just know it was a lot of, like, drinking and business.
I know they drink and smoke, and it's about advertising.
Yeah, beautiful women that are secretaries that are trying to make it in the business world, but they're women, and the glass ceiling is too high.
Yeah, that type stuff. And John Hamm's like the star. And also that chick from Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, what is her name? She's a really great actress, and I never know her name.
She is, but she's also a loony Scientologist.
Oh, how unfortunate.
I know, right?
Oh.
Okay, so other fun fact. Vincent Kartheiser is married to Alexis Bledel, a.k.a. Rory Gilmore. From the Gilmore.
Oh, my goodness. I never watched that show either.
Really?
Yeah,
no. You got sucked into the 90s, mid-2000s phenomena that was the Gilmore Girls?
No, I was working hard. Child labor.
Okay. I liked the show up until I had to work.
I don't even know what Gilmore Girls is about.
It's about a woman from an upper crust Connecticut background who gets pregnant as a teenager when she's like 15 or 16, and it doesn't want her parents' help, kind of, because she really resents her parents and is rebelling. So she kind of makes her own way. And around the time that her daughter is 16, she gets help to send her to the same, like, hoity-toity private school that she went to called Chilton. Because her daughter's, like, super smart and wants to go to Yale. And it's basically about their friendship and her coming of age.
Yeah, I wouldn't have liked that.
It's really funny, actually, despite some soap opera-y aspects later on. It was well written. That was the best part of the show, was the banter between the mother and the daughter.
Ew. Well, I guess I had to have been there back in the 90s.
I'm sure some of our fans will back me up on that, I think. Don't think less of me because I watched the Gilmore Girls, okay? I'm human. All right, so the movie starts. It's 1974, and Jeff Dahmer is a high school freshman living in Bath, Ohio, with his parents, Lionel and Joyce, and his brother, Dave. Now, Jeffrey develops an obsession from the very beginning of the film with the male jogger, Vincent Kartheiser. And he basically watches him from the bus every day. Watches the jogger, like, obsessively. Like you were saying earlier, for a hobby, he collects roadkill, essentially. And his father, who's a chemist, has provided chemicals for him. I guess the dad... It seems like the dad knows that there's something up. And, I mean, that's way more clear later on. But the dad's just kind of like, at least this is keeping him busy, I guess. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like everybody ignores what's going on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, his parents are constantly in turmoil. His mom has mental illness. His dad is a workaholic. The marriage is holding together by a thin thread. And, you know, she's obsessed with her youngest child and not Jeffrey. So he's just completely ignored, pretty much. Which sucks, but that is the reality of his childhood. So, his initial interest in all of this is he wanted to see how animals were put together, like their basic whatever. And I mean, that would be fine if he had developed it into being like a biologist or a taxidermist, which is something that he later said that maybe he would have done had things gone differently. So,
yeah, I feel like he could have been a chemist if he wasn't just a alcoholic psychopath.
Yeah. Raging alcoholic from, like, the age of 14. Can you imagine?
Yeah. 13.
13, right. So, like I was just saying, the dad ends up being like, you have got to get out and fucking make friends. No more of any of this. I'm trash in your lab. No more dissolving animals. We're done. This is over. Do something. He's like, but dad, I'm in the band. It's done enough. By the way, can I just say, I love Ross Lynch in this role. I had only heard of him briefly before because my nieces watched the Disney show that he was on, which was called Austin and Allie. It was like a musical. They were songwriters. How cute.
Oh.
No, it was a I'm sorry. It was a terrible show because it's a children's show and the writing for those aren't very good. They just never have been. Sorry, kids. But anyway, I just love the new trend of turning your Disney career on its head by being a serial killer. Zac Efron really pioneered it. Yeah, no, I love it though. He does a really, really good job.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, like, in fact, the guy who wrote the graphic novel, Derf Back Derf, he was on set one day and he basically said that he so encaptured the spirit of Jeff Dahmer that it creeped him out and he couldn't look him in the eye on set. And I mean, what a compliment, right?
Yeah. So I guess he nailed it.
Nailed it. Nailed it. So Jeff kind of starts acting out and making fun of his mother's interior decorator, who has cerebral palsy. It's really not PC or kosher.
Yeah, definitely not.
But it was the 70s, and that is the time period that they are portraying.
And that's what he did.
Yeah. Yeah. Watch the film. I'm not gonna reenact it or whatever. No. Okay, so Jeff inspires Jerf, who we were just speaking of, to start like cartoonizing him, drawing him in various situations, and that's later what becomes My Friend Dahmer, essentially. So him and his friends make a Dahmer fan club, and basically they just use Jeff to do stupid pranks throughout school. Like, there's a great scene where they're just sneaking him into all the yearbook photos, which that's like a classic cliche, too, honestly. Like, that happens a lot in fiction. So also, they end up going on this trip to Washington, D.C., and they managed, with Jeff, for some reason, to con themselves into visiting Walter Mondale. Why the vice president? I don't know. I feel like there's more interesting people than Walter Mondale, but that's besides the point. So, meanwhile, while this is happening, Joyce, his mother's mental illness, is off the charts, and it's only making their marriage worse. And Jeffrey has really started heavily drinking at this point, like bringing a flask with him and drinking in the morning. Yeah, awful. And this is where he begins killing animals. Stray dogs in particular.
Yeah, the dog dies, just so everybody knows.
Yeah. Yeah.
So sad.
I know.
I didn't like that.
No, me neither, but it's true to life, so.
Yeah. Oh, no.
I know. Ugh. I know. Anyway, so Jeffrey basically, because one of his friends goes to the doctor that he's been stalking, he cons his way into getting a visit to the doctor's office so he can see Vincent Kartheiser's cute ass in person. And he basically uses it as, so he gets a full-on physical so that the doctor basically has to see him nude. And it makes the doctor super uncomfortable because he gets a full-on erection. They do not show it, but it is obviously implied that that's what's just happened. And the doctor's basically like, you can get dressed now. Shuffles out because he's super uncomfortable. I mean, honestly, who wouldn't be if you turn around and there's a teenage boy who's at full attention?
Yeah.
That'd be so disturbing, would it not?
I think it happens a lot.
I think it does, but I still think that in this guy's mindset where homophobia ran rampant, like, he probably was disgusted.
Yeah, most likely. I mean, some men ejaculate during their prostate exam, so.
That's true, and that's not your fault.
It's not your fault at all. It just feels really good, apparently. I wouldn't know. I don't have a prostate.
Yeah, and I mean, neither one of our significant others are old enough to have that exam yet.
Oh, they're old enough. No, I'm just kidding.
Anyway. There are people that listen to this who are going to blush at that.
Yes. Blush away.
Anyway. So, while gone on that DC trip, the father moves out. And his mom basically just leaves with the little brother and leaves Jeff there by himself. So things are only getting worse. By the way, right after that exam, he goes home to furiously masturbate to the incident.
Oh, yeah. And was that the part where he like dreams of him right next to him?
Yeah, he has the dream of being with the corpse of Dr. Matthews.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that happens right after the furious masturbation.
Yeah, that part's so surreal.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa.
It's a very surreal scene. Yeah.
It keeps bringing you back. Like, you're like, oh, this is just some goofy high school kid with some weird fucking... And then it's like, oh, there's a dead dog. And it's like, shit, this is real. Because at some points, I don't know. At some points, it's not like... like you're watching Jeffrey Dahmer, you know? At some points, you're just watching like a kid, and then you see this, I don't know, this darkness creep out in different scenes that it's like, whoa, I wasn't expecting that.
Absolutely. You kind of forget that he's this infamous serial killer because in this moment, this little slice of his life, he's just a troubled kid. And the movie's really good at painting him that way as a human.
Yeah.
And it forces you to sympathize with him in a lot of ways.
Oh, I feel dirty.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a good movie.
It's a great movie. I actually was so excited to see it that, like, the second I was able to rent it, I paid the, like, $7 or $8.99 or whatever to rent it back in 2017 because it didn't come to theaters in Podunk, Mississippi.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, it's fine. Okay. So, after Jeff's father moves out, he gives him the family car, which, creepily enough, is a Volkswagen Beetle, the favorite vehicle of a certain other serial killer that we all know, Ted Bundy. He also drove a Volkswagen Beetle. You know who else liked the Volkswagen Beetle?
Who else?
Hitler.
Oh my God. Of course he would.
I'm exaggerating a little bit, but you know what? The point is, I mean, it is a German car, but the point is that car has a storied history, does it not? That model?
I know.
All right.
It even calls you to, like, you know, to become violent when you see one. Like, like punch buggy, no punch back.
I had have definitely been punched very hard by a child doing that. I was going to say who the child is in relation to me, but that's a really, really long story.
Yeah.
So just a child.
So I had a lot of bruises.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was always like hyper alert looking for them so I could punch them first because they hit really freaking hard. So I would be like looking out the window getting car sick constantly trying to find Volkswagen Beetle.
Oh, no, Morgan, that's terrible.
It's okay. I made it. I'm alive.
So around this time, he also starts stalking Dr. Matthews, but he never really goes through with attacking him. So, like I said, Jeff's completely alone. His mom's left him and his dad's in his apartment and doesn't seem to know that Jeff's alone. And because Jeff's already this incredibly sullen, isolated human, he doesn't even bother to be like, hey, Dad, Mom left me all alone. He just retreats further and further into his weird, creepy inner world. So, Durf spots Jeffrey walking home alone with blood on his fingernails. Durf offers Jeffrey a ride, finding him living alone with no plans for the future. Durf tells Jeffrey that he's leaving for college the following day and offers to give him all his drawings, but Jeffrey doesn't want them. He kind of menacingly invites Durf in for a beer, but Durf's like, nah. I'm good, bro.
It's like the power's cut off and you have no water.
Yeah.
And you're acting really weird.
Yeah, in reality, it was a different member of the Dahmer fan club that gave Jeff this ride home. But the director and writer thought it would be better to have Durf in more scenes. So he was inserted in more scenes than he was actually at. Like, for instance, he wasn't at prom. And he didn't go on that trip to Washington, D.C. either.
Okay.
Yeah.
So did the D.C. trip really happen where they met the...
I don't know if they actually met Walter Mondale or not. The D.C. trip did happen.
Yeah, I know the D.C. trip happened, but I don't know if they met. I can't find anything to support that.
Yeah, I can't find. I mean, I think it's just Durf Bechtard's, Durf's word against everyone else. So I don't know. Okay. I guess we'll take his word for it.
Okay, maybe. I'll take his word for it.
Maybe they did. I don't know.
I thought it was just like a little thing to throw into the movie.
It could have been. I don't know. Yeah. I feel like it was in the graphic novel too, though.
Oh, okay.
Then so I'm not sure if that was hyperbole or not, though. I don't know. Anyway, so basically he leaves and actually as he's pulling out, he notices the bat that Jeff has, and it freaks him out, and he never contacts Jeff again, never sees him again. And the next morning, Jeffrey drives around and picks up hitchhiker Stephen Hicks from a concert. And that's actually who his first victim is. And the closing credits note that he was never seen again, and that Jeffrey admitted to killing 17 men when he was finally arrested. Yeah, that's how it fades to black.
Yeah, it's pretty accurate.
Yeah, yeah. Like, well, I mean, it is a first-hand.
Hyper realistic.
Well, yeah, and I mean, it is based off of a comic that was a first-hand account of someone's actual time with him, so it's fairly true to life. Yeah.
I was looking at the timeline of the My Friend Dahmer, like the story in the book and the play. There was a play. There was a whole bunch of stuff. Like the graphic novel, he started writing like a week after. that he said he watched the news and they were taking out the coolers and stuff and the bags, like the hazmat suits and everything. And he started writing it like a week after that happened.
Because that was basically like, oh my God, I have a story to tell, you know?
Yeah. And he like would not talk to any reporters or anything. And he said there were several that would like beat on his door every day trying to get something from him because they knew they were friends in high school. But
yeah, I can't blame him for dodging that one.
Yeah, he only talked to one news source because his wife worked there and he did art on the side for the newspaper.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of it. It was some small newspaper.
So one of the things that the director did to really encapsulate the like late 70s feel was they made sure to get cars that were actually from the time period that actually still worked, were still running, you know, not too refurbished.
Yeah.
The sound of those motors to be right.
That's pretty neat. Those were some cool cars.
Yeah. Also, pretty much every person on who got, you know, worked even like as an extra was told from the second they were hired, don't cut your hair. Because, like, do not cut your hair. Let your hair get as shaggy as possible because in the 70s, that's how everybody rolled pretty much.
Yeah. I think they should bring it back. Bring back the 70s.
I mean, you tell me that there wasn't a weird combination, and at least in Mississippi. I don't know if it was like this everywhere else, but where we grew up, as a kid, like in the early 2000s, dudes had one of two hairstyles. You either had like the spiky bangs and and maybe like some blonde highlights, or you had this like long shaggy hair that swooped to the side and
often the swoosh.
Covered... that often covered your eyes and would curl up over the end of your ball cap.
Yeah, and you had to swoop your head to the side to get it out of your face so you could talk to people.
It's funny the things that were stylish back then. And now kids kids in high school now wish they could have lived when we were in high school.
I know. They're all wearing the clothes that I used to wear. I'm like, I had those shoes. What the fuck? I want them. Give me my shoes back.
They also wear some really ugly stuff, though. I've said that before. Like, the big, ugly, chunky, white, like, not K-Swiss, but you know what I'm talking about? Those big, all white, ugly, chunky.
Oh, the tennis shoes?
Tennis shoes, yeah.
Yes.
They're
fucking
hideous. Children.
Like,
you're just wrong. Trust me on this.
You look like a New Balance dad.
It's bad. It's really bad. I don't know why you guys think they look good.
Yeah, the New Balances are like coming back, like the all white. And I'm like, ugh.
That's like what my stepdad plays tennis in.
It's so fucking weird.
Come on, guys.
I could get a pair of those Steve Madden, those black. Do you remember those platform shoes? They were like Steve Madden and they had the mesh on the top.
Of course I know what you're talking about. I had a pair.
I saw a girl wearing those and I wanted to ask her where she got them. I was just
Madden started making them again a few years ago.
I want them.
You could buy them. I'm sure if you Googled it, you could get a pair.
I want them. I remember I was in like third grade when I had my first pair because they were super cool. And I hit my growth spurt in third grade and I went from a size 4 to a size 9 in like 2 weeks. It's probably like a month, but it really hurt and I had bone spurs. But it was so devastating to me that those shoes did not fit. I went out and bought another pair, of course, but my mom was like, these are a lot of money.
I think I had the Payless knockoff version.
I think I had the Steve Madden kind. Pretty sure.
I gotta tell ya, those Payless ones lasted forever. I still wore them up until like 7th grade.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Well, I'm pretty sure mine were the Steve Madden kind, because I remember the label. But yeah, I wore mine up until like 7th or 8th grade.
Now, 8th grade is when I started wearing what I lovingly called my bowling shoes that were, as it so happens, a Steve Madden pair. They were red leather, and they kind of bowed out into this weird, like, rectangular, rounded-off shape at the toe.
Oh, God.
And they had white stripes like Adidas on either side, and they were slip-on.
What the fuck?
They were so comfortable. I will see if I have a picture
of it. I'm just imagining clown shoes.
They're not that oversized. Like, they fit my feet, obviously. But kind of not. You'll just have to see them. They look like more
if someone steps on your foot, it just goes squeaky.
No. They look more like bowling shoes than clown shoes, I promise.
Okay.
But I'll just have to see if I can find a picture of them somewhere. I'll have to do mad Googling later.
Mad Googling.
If I find them, I'll put them on the Instagram for you guys to all see what the fuck I'm talking about. But yeah. I tell you what, though. I was a damn trendsetter with those. I got them when, like, Steve Madden first put them out. And then I started seeing people wearing the knockoffs all over school. And I was like, I did this. yeah, it was super cool. Anyway, so this movie has, like, an 86% on Rotten Tomatoes. Most people like it. It's a good movie. It costs about $1 million. Well, about 1.5 mil due to trying to get all the 70s themed stuff right. Yeah. So, good movie. Morgan is going to start on his actual teenage childhood and tell us, you know, some more scintillating tidbits that Dirk didn't know, I guess, you know. Right after our short commercial break.
Short.
And we're back. So I just wanted to say one more tidbit about the movie. So Ross Lynch, when he was like auditioning for this, he went and got, so he's in a boy band, right? That's like his brothers and one sister called R5. He got his photographer, like touring photographer from R5, to film his audition. That's how into it he was.
Oh my God.
Oh, you gotta love it. Anyway, so Morgan's gonna tell us about Jeff's actual home life in his high school days. Take her away.
Yes. So, Jeffrey Lionel Dahmer was born May 21st, 1960. He had many nicknames. The Milwaukee Cannibal, the Milwaukee Monster.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Dahmer, you know, he grew up in a really weird household. So like Anna said earlier, mom was mentally ill, dad was workaholic. Totally true. So he grew up, he was the first son, of Joyce and Lionel. He was born in Milwaukee, but around, his young childhood, they moved a lot. There's like some sources that say that Joyce was a neat freak or germaphobe and wouldn't allow anyone to touch Jeffrey or Dahmer. And except for her while she was feeding him or changing him. And I don't know how true that is. They said, some people say, no, he was raised normally, like as an infant, had good loving parents, and he was like cared for and hugged and everything. But other people say, no, she was germaphobe. He wouldn't touch her, or she wouldn't touch him. So around age 4, he had corrective surgery for a double hernia. And some people say that after that, he was definitely changed. He was more quiet and withdrawn. Around this time, his younger brother was born. And apparently they put more attention on the baby more than him. I don't know how true that is either. But when he entered first grade, that's when, his dad just was like not at home. And that's when his mom attempted suicide. So, also, there's some reports that she was on like 27 medications when she was pregnant with him. Don't know how true that is because some of these sources are a little wonky. So she was definitely mentally ill, suffered from depression and probably more personality disorders.
I'm pretty sure it does mention in the book by Jeffrey Dahmer's father that she was on quite a few medications.
So Jeffrey Dahmer's dad does have a book, and his mom has spoken out and said it's all lies.
So, of course she says that. She's not past the animosity of their marriage.
Yeah. No, definitely not. I mean, she's dead now, but...
She wasn't at the time.
Yeah, up until the end, she was, like, fighting tooth and nail over that book and over how people perceived her. But, I mean, there's documented cases that she was, like, hospitalized and was on a lot of medication. And the divorce, a lot of it was... It was a, like, violent divorce between the both of them. So... I don't know. I think I'm going to say I believe the dad more than the mom.
I think so too.
Yeah. Just from all the reports of all the interviews and books written and everything.
From everything we know, he seems like a far more credible source.
Yes, exactly. So she was just not present due to the multitude of mental illness. And then his dad wasn't present either, just due to him being, he was in school for like chemistry. He was becoming a chemist when he was a kid. And then after that, he continued his studies. So he was like working and going to school a lot. So Jeffrey kind of just went into his own mind, I guess. Like they just didn't really nurture his youth, I guess. But one thing his dad did nurture was his interest in dead animals. So like the movie shows, he did collect roadkill, animal carcasses. He even killed a neighborhood dog and put his head on a stake. He would take the animals and bring it into the tool shed, and then he would like take them apart. At first it was like a son and dad thing. Like they would, he brought some chemicals from work and showed him how to bleach bones. And at first it was just him and his dad doing this, and like it was their, you know, after work thing together, which is weird, but whatever. He showed an interest in it. His dad was interested in it. So they would take the animals and dissolve them in acid. And then it was like insects and stuff at first. And then it started turning into animal carcasses. And then he started like taking them apart and trying to put them back together. And he also would climb under the house and get dead animals that had died under the house, and then take the bones and like save them, put them in jars. And Durf actually wrote about how his tool shed looked, saying that Jeffrey called it the hut, and he would keep all the carcasses stored in pickle jars, and he would tell everybody it was acid, but I think it was, because that's what his dad would say. But Durf said that he would like say, yeah, it's acid, and think it was really just a household chemical or water. But by the age of 12, Jeff had dozens and dozens of jars arranged on wooden shelves around the hut. And it was just like tons of different animals and animal parts. And he'd like to show people this and freak them out.
He's so, a little like Herbert West from Reanimator and H.P. Lovecraft stories. Except he just wasn't in college and didn't have access to, you know, human corpses, thankfully. Yeah.
And he wasn't into the occult, as far as I know.
Right, yeah. But you get what I'm saying. There's like a, he's kind of that type of guy, you know?
Yeah.
The only difference is Herbert West was not an alcoholic. He had to stay sharp.
Yeah, and I don't think he, like, did a Dahmer. Did he? Did he act out?
I mean, he killed all kinds of people in the name of science.
Yeah. But did he run down the hall shrieking and holding his
arm? No, he did not do a Dahmer. He was all about science. Dahmer was a far more emotional being.
Yeah. He was like, I want these animal parts. They're going to stay with me forever because everyone always leaves me. Boo hoo! Sorry.
I mean, that was him. That, yeah, that's accurate.
That's totally him. But yeah, there were like tons of jars in this, hut, and like people in elementary school knew about it. And then like in junior high or, middle school, like kids that had known him since he was a little kid all had like stories about how weird he was. And everybody knew about his jars of roadkill, and they just, I mean, that pretty much had him labeled as a freak. So a lot of people ignored him in like middle school. It wasn't until high school that he started getting into like having friends. Cause he did Dahmer. He did a Dahmer. So that was like the only reason why he really had friends. Sad.
Yeah. He became kind of a class clown of sorts. The weird class clown.
Yeah. So like by 12, he had amassed like dozens and dozens of bones. I don't know what time it was that he killed the dog, but that was one of the more sadistic parts of this, because it was just like an interest in dead animals. But then he actually went out, cut off his neighbor's dog's head and nailed the body to the tree and impaled the skull with a giant branch and then made a wooden cross around it. So he like stabbed on the stake and then made that stake into a cross.
Yeah.
Behind his house. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I think he was 12 or 13 at this point.
Hey, Jeff, that's not normal behavior there, bud.
Yeah, we wanted a nativity scene, but this is just a little bit weird.
Yeah, that's more like a satanic scene.
Yeah, this was before Satanic Panic, so
this true. But I mean, in the South, wasn't there always panic about?
I realize everywhere.
I realize. So this was Ohio, but, you know, I have to put that dig in. It's our roots, you know. Continue, Mo.
So in 1968, when he was 8 years old, that's when they moved into the house that's like shown on the movie.
Oh, my God. I can't believe I forgot to say this. They actually filmed in the house he grew up in. That's literally his home.
That is his house. Yeah. I was wondering if we were going to bring that in.
Absolutely. Because
I was looking at it.
I forgot to mention it.
Yeah, it's wild. Because, like, the... oh, my God, Durf. I just can't...
Yeah. Durf, Beck Durf.
Yeah, Durf, Beck Durf.
Well, I mean, the Durf is just derived from his last name, so it's a little redundant, but anyway.
Yeah.
Durf.
Durf, he, like, went back in 1992 to his house to explore it.
Yeah.
He was, like, drawn back to it.
Well, he was on the set, too, and he said that it, you know, felt, like, not holy, but a place that had to be treated with reverence or something.
Yeah. But yeah, he like went back and he like remade the clubhouse because it wasn't in existence.
Oh. Because
it was like just a pile of wood on the ground. So he recreated it from memory.
Oh, wow.
What I read on his blog.
Yeah.
But yeah, that house was there. The dad built it in 1970. So that's around the time when he started like collecting all those bones. So he was like 10 when it started, I guess.
Right.
So I think he probably was around like 12 or 13 when he killed that dog.
Right.
He couldn't have been like 8, like some sources were saying. I think that's a little too young.
Yeah.
So around 1968, Jeff was just asked to save the bones from dinner. It's fucking weird. So he would. His dad allowed him. And that's when he started learning to bleach the bones. Because he was just collecting them. And some people called it his rattle. Which is really weird.
That's really weird. You know, I would go on record as saying that most parents, you know, are going to nurture whatever their kid shows interest in. If it seems innocuous at the time, nobody thinks, ah, this one's going to be a famous serial killer, you know?
Yeah, that would be a weird realization, like looking at your kid and be like, you're going to grow up to be a serial killer, aren't you?
What?
Like, there were, like, so many signs of him, like, acting out and, like, drinking really young, but no one ever did anything.
I feel like a lot of times when you're so close to something like that, it's kind of hard to see just how bad it is, you know?
Yeah, like, with the divorce and everything and them, like, fighting constantly, I would feel like now, you know, like a school counselor would talk with him, but there's no record of any like school counselor or like him going to psychologist. I guess it's the time too.
That's the late 70s. I mean, they didn't even seem to realize that he was coming to school fucking loaded every morning either.
Yeah. Like, well, I was watching a interview with some people that went to school with him. I think it was through Oxygen, but they said that they think that some of the teachers were aware, they just turned their heads to it, because he kept a bottle of gin and beer in his locker.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that
he would walk around with a styrofoam cup full of booze.
Yeah, in the morning, like walk in with that. I feel like they just
ignored it.
No, not only that, but I mean, back then, they just didn't keep a hyper-focus on kids the way they do now. You know, this was super pre-Columbine. Not everyone was a potential hazard around every corner, you know?
Yeah, true, true. They're like, oh, he's just doing what kids do. You know, get drunk at 14, come in the morning all drunk and hungover for their math exam.
Well, you know, his family's weird.
Yeah, his dad's a weirdo.
And the mom's a weirdo, too. She's not all right.
She's not all right. She's not. But, yeah, no, he started drinking at 13. And then by 14, he was, like, a hard alcoholic. Like, straight up, all day, all night. He would hide liquor bottles in his jacket. He would keep liquor and beer in his car and in his locker. And then he was coming into the school with a cup of scotch. And yeah. One of his female friends said, like, why are you drinking? It's so early. Like, why do this? And he said, it's my medicine. And he would tell people it was his medicine.
I mean, so, that is literally his only coping mechanism at this point, is being a raging alcoholic.
Yeah, just being a raging alcoholic. Because it was around this time when he realized he was gay, too. So I think maybe it was, like, him being gay, him being an outcast, and then, like, his parents just fighting, living in this hell house where his brother's, like, put on this pedestal and he's kind of forgotten about.
Like, that is such a lonely existence. You're gay in a time when it's literally terrifying to be gay.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
Your parents completely ignore you. You don't really have friends at school. And the ones that you are friends with only sort of like you.
Yeah, they're just keeping you around because you can do funny things sometime.
Yeah, like, that would be so fucking lonely.
Yeah, and then, you know, like, all of the elementary school kids had known him and knew of his, like, love for dead animals. So nobody really wanted to be around him because he's the kid that collected dead animals.
And I mean, I don't blame the children for that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I used to collect, like, bird's nests and, like, locusts so I could have, like, a locust army.
I mean, Morgan, that is way, way different.
Yeah, it's way tamer. Way tamer. Yeah.
I mean, shit. I caught a minnow once in my parents' ditch and fed it to my betta fish.
Well, my brothers used to joke that I was going to grow up to be a serial killer because I used to dissect frogs a lot, like a lot of frogs. But I wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to know how the body worked. Not how to put them back together.
And turn them into your zombie sex slave.
Yeah, zombie sex frog. Oh my god.
Oh, that needs to be a t-shirt.
Yeah, zombie sex frog. Like its little parts are like, you know, stapled back together or like paper clips.
Like Franken Toad.
Yeah, Franken Toad, the sex zombie.
I have something to talk about later on in relation to that, but continue.
So around like 14, he's drunk. He has no friends. And then around like high school, so like 15, 16 is when he starts his fascination with the jogger. And also is when he started doing these pranks and becoming the class clown. And this is where the Dahmer, what was it? The Dahmer fan club started. So it was Durf and a few of their friends. They called themselves Honors. What was it? They were all in like advanced classes, and they're all nerds, and they all liked art. Like Durf was into the art and was part of the newspaper, I think, in high school. So those were his friends, were like the art kids, nerdy kids. So they started the Dahmer fan club. And they had different characters. And Dahmer was, you know, the main focus of their fan club, of course. So Durf would like draw Dahmer into all these different things. Like he was drawing stuff for art class and for the newspaper, but he would always include like Dahmer in the background, or like in the movie, it's pretty much accurate about that. Like with the scene where he's in the high school photos. So I don't think it was Durf that put him in the photos, but that really did happen. But whenever the yearbooks came out, all of his faces were like blacked out. And there was an interview with a woman who went to school with him. And she said at first, like, it was like the most hilarious thing ever. But now looking back in all the photos, like, it's just this black figure in all of them. And it's really creepy now. Because, like, he got into several clubs that he wasn't a part of.
Yeah.
Was in all the photos. But they blacked out his face in all of them, whenever they printed them. So, he would, like, act out and run down the hallway. And like contort his body really weird and start screaming and running, and people would laugh, and then he would just walk back to class like nothing happened. And she said, "Why do you do this? Like, it's really annoying. Why would you ever do this?" And he said, "I just like to shake people up." And he would also like, when he got that girl to lay on the floor and he did the chalk around her, he would do that a lot to people.
Yeah.
He would get people to lay down and just like make outlines of them around the school. It's so creepy.
But yeah, like, you know, he wasn't going to become a serial killer. No.
Yeah. It's kind of funny.
Hindsight is 20/20 though, you know?
Yes. Yes. But, so that whole part of the movie is like completely accurate about the things he did, like acting out in class, drinking, and that fascination with the jogger. He would watch him because he had a routine, and Jeff had like learned his routine and would like hide in the woods and just watch him. And one day he went out in the woods and found a giant heavy log and was waiting for him in the bushes, but that day the jogger didn't run. And if he would have, he probably would have done his first kill at the age of 17. Because he was planning on killing him then.
Yeah.
But he did not run that day. So he...
I bet looking back on it, that guy is probably like, whoa.
Yeah. I would be terrified to go running in public ever again.
I don't think I ever would.
Yeah. Just go to the gym.
Like, oh my God, this like psychotic, creepy teenage boy has been stalking me for months. What?
Yeah, in the woods and masturbated about you a lot. Like a lot.
That would be deeply, deeply, deeply disturbing. Yeah. It is deeply, deeply disturbing.
Yeah, I wonder if that jogger like was alive and like realized that he was the jogger.
I don't know.
Because they make it seem like the doctor. It may have been that doctor. I don't know. I couldn't. They only mentioned him as a jogger.
Yeah,
I know. Anonymous. So.
I feel like maybe they morphed two people into one in the movie.
Yeah, I think they did. Because it was like the fascination and everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wonder if that guy like knows he was that jogger.
I don't know.
Ugh.
Yeah. It's super creepy.
Yeah, so he was just like a weird guy, and if he wouldn't like, I don't know, if he was just so bizarre, and I think that's the only reason why people like left and everything. Like,
it's kind of, it's like one part nervous laughter, like what's this guy doing, then also just like, well, it's fun to laugh at someone that you feel is worse off than you, and somehow, like, that's that's like that teen herd insecurity mentality.
Yeah. Yeah, and but, like, around his senior year is when his parents really, really amped up the fight of their divorce. And pretty much like just ignored Dahmer and forgot about him. And they really did move out. Like, his dad moved out when he was 16 or 17. And then when the divorce was going on, his mom took his brother and like literally just left and didn't tell him.
Yeah. Moved to Wisconsin, different fucking state, and was just like, I'm out. Didn't bother to let him know.
Yeah. Bye. Yeah, so he was in this house with no furniture, no running water, no lights, and just living there. He was broke. I mean, he was in fucking high school.
Yeah.
But yeah, he lived there alone. It's just crazy to think about, like, how would you...
I don't know how you wouldn't, like, reach out, like, hey... You guys are still technically responsible for me.
Yeah.
At least until I turn 18. Like, what the fuck, man? Yeah, who's making the house payments?
Yeah, right? But
I have questions.
Yeah, no, and like, because Lionel, the dad, he lived there until like 1983. But I guess around that time, that's when, like, Jeff had tried to join the army. He did join the army. It was in Germany. So I guess his dad moved back when he left.
I guess so, yeah. Weird. Yeah. So weird.
Yeah, because he couldn't have been there when he killed that guy.
No, his father was still in the apartment at that time.
Yeah. Because, like, I was reading on Durf's blog that Lionel bought out Joyce's share in the house in 1978. That was when their divorce was finalized. But he lived there until 1983 with his second wife, and he got custody of the son.
Rightly so.
So there was like a period of this time where he was just in the home alone, and that's when he committed his first murder with the kid hitchhiking, the Stephen Hicks.
And that's about where the movie left off.
Yeah. Yeah. And he brought him back. I've heard different stories that they had sex and then he killed him. Not sure. But he did, he gave him some beer. They were drinking. And then whenever Stephen Hicks tried to leave, that's when he hit him in the back of the head with a barbell and then killed him and buried his body on the property.
Right.
So that was his first kill. And then after that, he was dormant. He went and joined the army.
Yes. So we are going to do our normal end little conversation where we just catch up with each other. And we will continue Jeff's story on the 21st with Dahmer, which the person playing Dahmer this time will be Jeremy Renner, none other than Hawkeye himself.
He wasn't a Disney star, was he?
No, that's not. If anything, he went the opposite direction. He played Dahmer first, and then being in a Marvel, in the Marvelverse, he is technically now a Disney star.
Yeah, now he's a Disney star. That's right.
Yeah,
he did the backwards way. Wow, he's 50.
Yeah, he's old. Yes, he's been around for a long time.
Yeah, I didn't realize he was 50.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, Dahmer came out in 2002.
Shit, it was that long ago?
Yeah.
Wow, I feel old.
Yeah. You know, yeah. That was only like 19 years ago. No biggie.
Oh, God.
Doesn't that make you feel ancient?
Yeah, when you put it that way, Jesus.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Like, for instance, this September is the 20-year anniversary of 9/11.
What?
Where has the time gone?
I missed that day of school. I was sick with the flu.
Oh, that's a bummer, dude.
Yeah. Sat home with a fever watching it on TV.
I mean, to be fair,
I had fever dreams of 9/11.
I bet you did. To be fair, though, you didn't exactly miss much. No. I mean, like, a lot of people got sent home or their parents came to pick them up. Like, the school day was pretty much null and void. It's not like you missed class, really, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. No, I just remember everybody was like, man, you missed a homeroom. We watched it all. Like, they didn't switch classes, so everybody just stayed in there and watched it until their parents came and picked them up. But, yeah.
We didn't find out until third period when I was in history class.
Oh.
I think, and my history teacher basically just, like, shut and locked the door and was like, they asked us, like, not to show this so we don't upset people, but I'm just gonna show this because this is literally history happening right now.
Yeah, that's... I don't know what happened in the class, but I know that it was, like, homeroom because we had watched the news sometimes. It
like
was...
like, Channel 1?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
We'd like watch the news and get caught up on current events and stuff, and that was like homeroom for the first hour, 50 minutes or whatever, and that's when it happened. But I was asleep at home with a fever.
Oh no. So Morgan, while you've been away from us, I know you've been super busy, but have you watched anything good or done anything fun?
Yeah. I've been watching In the Dark. I don't know if I told you about this last time.
I think you told me. I don't know if you told the audience.
Yeah, I like it. I'm waiting on the next season, but it's about this 20-something year old. She's a blind woman who is trying to solve the murder of her friend who she met in an alley after he saved her life when she was mugged. So he comes up missing and she's trying to solve the murder and she's blind and she's a raging alcoholic and she possibly has a lot of STDs because she has a lot of sex with a lot of random people and she just buys like Plan B. I'm like, dude, go to the health department, get a checkup. You're probably spreading a lot of shit. Like, you probably have gonorrhea for herpes. Because she's definitely not wearing protection because she says that. I'm like,
ugh. Ooh.
Yeah, I know. That's the only thing I'm like,
you can. Gonorrhea for herpes is pretty serious.
Yeah, you can
get that checked out.
You can go play the field and have sex with who you want. Just wear protection and keep it safe and go get your checkup and get your partner checked up. And then, yeah, you do you.
Yeah, that's important.
Just keep it safe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Protect. But yeah, I've just been watching that, and I started listening to another podcast. I don't know if I can advertise another podcast here.
It's just a recommendation.
Yeah, it's Your Own Backyard.
Oh, I know that podcast.
Yeah, I've been listening to that. Actually, my the doctor, the surgeon who's going to do my hand surgery for carpal tunnel actually recommended me this because he asked me what my hobbies were. And I was like, do a podcast. And then we started talking about murder podcasts. So if you're listening, hey.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah. It's pretty good. I like it.
Okay.
Yeah. What have you been up to?
Okay. So
you vaccinated, bitch.
Yeah, I got fully vaccinated.
What?
Yesterday.
What, Pfizer or Moderna?
Moderna.
Oh, you're a Moderna bitch.
Yeah, Moderna representing. My arm feels like lead, and I have chills and the sweats, but I'm fine otherwise.
Nice. I think yours was less bad than mine.
It sounds like it. I never really felt sick or anything. I just got, you know, chills and a fever. And I'm sweating my ass off. And my arm feels like lead.
Oh.
Woo!
It's but
it's a really sexy look.
It's a sexy look.
It's a super sexy look, yes.
Well, if you put your arm down and walk with a limp, then you'll be doing a Dahmer.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry.
No.
Not a sexy.
Oh, no. So anyway, so I rewatched two seasons of a show and actually finally finished the last two seasons because I never did all these years. So I just finished doing a rewatch / first watch of Wilfred.
Oh, I haven't finished that either.
It's worth finishing. Mark might tell you otherwise, but I thought it was I thought it was worth finishing.
I never watched all of that.
I fucking love Elijah Wood. He's a big old horror nerd like me. He and his producer partner actually have their own production company that they just make horror movies with called Spectre Vision.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I fucking love Elijah Wood and all his like interesting film choices. Like he's been in quite a few like suspense horror films over the past, I don't know, last 10 years.
Yeah.
And I just I fucking love him. I love him. He's so cute. I just want to eat him up.
He's going to eat you up.
But also, oh man, Wilfred's kind of a really depressing show because if you think about it, the whole show is one man's battle with mental illness.
Yeah.
The whole show is. And there's a talking dog, or is there?
Yeah, is it? Is there even a dog? There's a dog.
There's a dog because how else would Jenna make sense, his neighbor who owns the dog?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just don't understand how they go out and like drink and stuff. Did that happen?
Dude, you just gotta do a whole rewatch of the show. And
yeah, I haven't watched it in so long.
Yeah, do a rewatch of the first couple of seasons and then, you know, finish it all the way through. There's only four seasons. It's pretty easy to crank out.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah. I'm not going to ruin anything for people who haven't watched Wilfred, but there were some moments that I was genuinely upset about.
I hear it's pretty fucking wild, so.
Yeah, it's like, it's funny and it's sad. It's both. Yeah. And some things just made me fucking pissed off. So, yeah, it's fun. It's worth a go, for sure. What else have I done? Oh, I know what I was going to bring up that I mentioned earlier that I was going to bring up. Yesterday, I watched Frankenhooker on Shudder.
What is Frankenhooker? I'm Googling this.
Oh, my God. It's terrible. It's one of the worst movies I've ever watched.
1990.
I think I liked Troll 2 better than this. That's how bad it is, in my opinion.
What the fuck? I'm reading the IMDb. It says a medical student sets out to recreate his decapitated fiance by building her a new body made of Manhattan street prostitutes.
That is exactly what he does. It's so bad. So first off, you see him like talking to himself about how he's gonna do all this, and he's like arguing with. Hey guys, we're back. We had slight technical difficulties.
Damn you, internet!
That weak sauce internet of Morgan.
That weak sauce. Fucking weak!
Anyway, so Morgan, I was talking about Frankenhooker.
Oh, that's it. That's it. That's what we're talking about.
So, the boyfriend's doctor dude, med student, he goes, like I was saying, he goes to look for prostitutes, and he essentially is allowed to pick from this one pimp's prostitutes. He, like, gets granted 30 minutes to, like, measure them and find the perfect woman, because he's going to use their body parts. Yeah, it's a half-baked plan, but he, like, kind of like sympathizes with them or something and doesn't want to hurt them, but they get in his medical bag, which his original plan was to make them OD on meth. So he has this batch of meth in his bag that's like lethal, right? And so they start comically smoking insane amounts of meth, these like giant rocks that make no sense to smoke. And then they start like making out with each other and stuff, and it's way past 30 minutes, so the pimp's also like downstairs like, what funny business is going on? And he's just this big like muscle thug, you know. And so after they get like too heated, or they've been on the meth for too long, they like spontaneously combust.
What?
Yes, but
don't do drugs, kids.
But the way that they spontaneously combust is the best part, because it looks like they made paper mache versions of the models and then put fireworks and exploded the fireworks inside of them. Shit, you not. That is the level of special effects in this film.
I have to see this.
It's on Shudder. It's so bad it's sort of good. Make a drinking game of it.
Every time someone smokes meth.
Or spontaneously explodes. Or the Frankenhooker herself makes a really weird face. You'll see what I mean. But yeah, it was kind of fun. I mean, I felt stupider for watching it, but it was also sort of fun. It's hard to explain. I have a love-hate relationship with it.
I was looking through some pictures, and there's one where he's trying to feed wine to just a head.
Yeah. it's good stuff. Another movie that I watched. So it had its world premiere on Joe Bob Briggs' The Last Drive-In last week. But it's called Fried Berry.
Fried Berry.
Yeah, so it's this South African horror film. And it's basically just one bad drug trip, sort of. So Barry's like this, like, burnout, you know, junkie. And he gets abducted by aliens. And then it's basically just, like, an alien within his body, but he's sort of still in there. And it's just the alien experiencing human life really fucked up on drugs. It's interesting. And the dude who plays Fried Berry is fucking weird looking, so that adds to it. I recommend not being sober for this one, guys. It's better that way.
Fried Gary.
Fried Berry.
Oh, Berry.
Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty interesting. But kind of fun. I had a fun time with it. Also, like, South African accents are something else. They're, like, kind of Australian sounding, but kind of not.
Yeah. Like the D'Antwoord.
Speaking of, did I ever mention on the show that I cried my eyes out when I saw Chappie? I did. Now, Mark, all he has to do now is look at me and go, Chappie good? And I get teary-eyed. I'm not even kidding.
Chappie good?
Chappie good? That's like our little inside thing now.
Anytime
something's sad, he looks at me and goes, Chappie good? I go, Chappie good!
Ninja!
Diane, they're like from another planet, man.
They are. I was sad that they canceled their concert that I was supposed to go to. I bought tickets and they were like, yeah, we'll refund you, and only got a portion of it back. And so mad.
Was that for last year?
No, it was like right after my mom died, and I was like, you know, I'm gonna go out and have a good time and watch Diane Twert. Like, it was probably like 2 weeks after my mom died. I was like, I need to get out. And then they fucking canceled.
Oh, no.
I cried so hard.
That's terrible.
I know. Then they never came back. They never came back to Charlotte.
Damn them.
Mm-hmm. I wrote them a really mean message on Facebook. And I've never done that in my life. But it was, like, very cathartic. They probably just didn't even read it.
I doubt it. And, you know, they clearly have such a good opinion of Americans. So.
Yeah. I was like, bleh, my mom died.
Oh, I'm working. Oh, man. They probably were just like, apartheid.
They're probably like, oh. They're probably like, what the fuck, she on my?
And they probably just never fucking saw it, is what really happened.
I think they just like, got their people that run their social media just to delete it.
Maybe, who knows?
They probably shouldn't read it. I don't even know what I said anymore. It was like a fucking 3-page paper.
Oh my god, Morgan. All right. Well, on that note, I'm gonna go take a shower and get off my COVID vaccine sweats.
Ooh.
Fucking gross now. I don't know. Morgan's gonna go tackle the ghost that knocked over her
internet.
Her router.
Yeah, I have no idea what happened. We even went in the attic and looked. It was like a loud bang throughout our whole house. We thought it was RC trying to get his sweet potatoes. But
Morgan, you went into the attic? That's horror movie 101.
Is this Morgan really talking?
Tune in next time.
Next time.
But yeah, we'll be back with 2002's Dahmer and the Killing Years of Jeffrey Dahmer on the 21st.
Woo! See you then. Or, I mean, you hear us then.
Yeah. Crazy. Crazy
listeners.
Yeah.
And dogs or cats or budgies.
Sure, but you know, cat like slang, like you're cool person.
Oh. I was saying dog like D A W G.
See, we were both just talking about people.
All right.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.